they talk about that kind of stuff.
I mean,
some of the rest of us are
just I haven't had an experience
with some of the administrative people there. They're interested in doing stuff.
Yeah,
so I've been to a couple of holiday parties and talked to like potential places for our graduates. It's just more. I don't think it would necessarily take from our program. I think it would just be people that would normally take German would be taking German then, you know, so then they might transfer in. Because it's kind of weird, you know, when people live in a country where the first language isn't whatever you're speaking, it is more challenging. Like, most, a lot of the people that I know that moved to the United States, similarly to your friend, that was a time when it wasn't cool to speak another language, you know, so their families, a lot of times, wouldn't teach their kids German at all, you know.
Yeah. Okay, 2 minute marketing, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Backstage, yeah. So, Nancy. So I was waiting for you, and I realized, who am I? Oh, God. I can't them write a letter. I'm sorry. So that's what I did. Sound good? Okay.
Yeah. Now, this one item, when we get to it, is just title one. It's supposed to be two different titles. So just I don't know that it's just like two presentations.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Two books.
Got it. Thanks. You know. Okay.
I know she was out of town.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. This is great turnout for November. I think it's actually because it's post Thanksgiving. I think usually we have a slumberly attendance for the pre Thanksgiving. So I would like a motion to approve the agenda, please, if you are done talking. Oh, sorry. All right, thank you. Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. I've never gotten a no on that. A motion or the motion to exit the meeting. A motion to approve the minutes as they were posted. Thank you. First and a second, anyone? Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. I say it every time, but I swear this is the time it's going to be shorter. Than all the other times. So one good thing to know, as you know, the Regents did approve the honorary degree that went out the other day, so we were able to open for new nominations, and I encourage all of you to think about if there's someone in your life or you think that should be in our lives. The process is open until December 17th, so they are accepting nominations until that day, or?
Yeah, until 5 p.m.
Until 5 p.m., so I think that would be great to have a part in that. We'll see if the Regents revamp the process. As you know, we'll be having new Regents soon, so who knows where that is. Something I thought was interesting I wanted to share with you, it's a year and a half away, but Nicole Tammy from our GEO office, everyone, that's the Global Education Office, has secured a convention of an interesting ilk. The International Association for College Admission Counseling Conference will be held here on campus July 11th through 17th of 2020 for the year in advance. I think it's fascinating. So this is for recruiters and high school counselors in 90 countries around the world and counting. It could go up. Last year at their event, they had 1,400 people. That means these people will be on campus to check us out in a way, surreptitiously, right? We just happen to be hosting it. So there'll be opportunities for us to perhaps do presentations. I talked to Nicole today, and she said maybe the faculty can get together and do an abstract and be involved in a panel. But at the very least, there'll be a college fair, which is something I'm kind of abuzz about in other arenas as well. So this is an opportunity for us to tell people in other countries, we exist and we do great things here. There's also, apparently, there's an addendum to each one of these conferences where people stay in the state post-conference and tour the state to see other colleges. So I swallowed hard at that because I said, well, they're here for us. Why do we want them to, you know? So we want to look better than anywhere else they may visit, is my point. And I am slightly competitive in that. So send them, which is the worst school? Let's send them there. No comments,
please.
It's
not the worst school. It's just flat.
It's just flat. Okay. We have mountains. No one else has it. So something interesting, right? Okay, finances. You know, the president is here. The provost is here. I feel today I leave any of that discussion to them. But I want you all to know that we're in the middle of waiting right now to see what the legislators, we know who they'll be, but we don't know how they'll vote on certain issues, and see what the climate is in Santa Fe. And as you know, we're also waiting to see what the governor does for our regential appointments. So we have, just a recap, we'll talk later about the regents. I've scheduled a discussion for that. But two of them only are slated to stay. In other words, their terms are not up for two more years, and that's Rob Doty and Maren Lee. But I know Tom Clifford expires December 31st. Technically, Michael Brasher expires in March, but I imagine she could appoint someone in his place. I've heard a lot of rumors. I've heard that they're thinking of staggering appointment. I've heard that she's wanting 7 new ones. I've heard that she wants 5 new ones. No one really knows. I'll just reference this now, and we'll discuss it later. My point is I'd like to get the faculty's viewpoint on what we're looking for in a region. So later on, the discussion will be as though we are a search firm, seeing what characteristics do we think a region should possess, and then I'm just trying, like mad, to find a way to tell her this through various means. By the way, if anyone has those means, do speak up and let me know. Get it, Carla? Yes? Okay.
Have the means.
Great. Okay. Get your speed dial out, please. So we just want to make sure, look, these things are political. People do things for them. That's not the way it should be. That kind of is the way it is sometimes. But perhaps within that realm and in that world, there are people more qualified than others. And that's all we need to say right now, I think. I will say about finances, you know there are severe pullbacks to colleges, right? And the provost office has tried to minimize that by taking some money from Central Reserve, some money from the provost office. But just to give you an example, and I think I can share these because I learned this in an open meeting. So the College of ANS is being docked $272,000, and that's the highest, that's the biggest college, but that's the biggest pullback. The College of Fine Arts, $40,700, just to give you an idea, right? Engineering, $60,000, Anderson, $84,000, and the College of Education, $97,000. I was writing quickly, so I didn't get to write everyone's college down. But I guess I say this also to have a heart for your chair when you ask for money and they say, oh my gosh, you know, I can't even pay for this adjunct professor I have. Not saying that's great or anything, just thought you'd like to be in the loop a little bit about that. So here's an odd thing I'm going to tell you. I'm on two committees. Well, it ends up being about four committees, right, Terry? Because every committee has two subcommittees. So sometimes I actually sit in a meeting and I don't know what meeting I'm in. Not because I've lost my brain, although sometimes, yes, thanks, Bob. A lot of confidence. Because they overlap. So these committees are the Budget Leadership Team and the Enrollment Task Force Team. But as you can imagine, they overlap and are sources for new enrollment possibilities and new revenue possibilities. So I thought I'd throw out a few ideas for you and encourage you to reach out to me or to Terry or to anyone you think might listen to you. But if you think no one will listen to you, reach out to me because I have a pretty loud voice. So one thing, that I thought you would find this interesting, the four-day teaching work week has surfaced again. Again, it's just surfacing as a possibility. Someone even said that one day could be for enrichment. I have no dog in the fight, and neither do any of the people I've talked to about it. People are talking about leasing opportunities on campus. One of the deans said, hey, you know, we don't rent out our space. We give out our space, and we should be renting it. Where I am in the College of Fine Arts, we rent Keller Hall. And so apparently I'm not allowed to use the word rent, but we do rent. It's a rental agreement. So, but if you rent out your building, maybe it's called something else, a charge to fee for it. I'm not here to discuss legalities, but those sources. grand challenge possibilities. How can we partner corporate matches, like with Intel and IFDM? I'm just throwing these out. None of these have happened, so don't quote me for that reason. Just to get your brain functioning. Here's something that I will reference in a moment. Online new certificate programs for teachers in the area. So remind me to get back to this with the Academics Within Borders project, which is the last thing I'm going to talk to you about today. Okay, here's another one of my crazy ideas. We thought about this in the meeting the other day. Small donors, this obviously wouldn't cost a lot, but give us a lot. Renting, or what do you call donations? Trees. So you get a tree for your loved one, and you get a plaque on it, and you rent it either for a year or for a period of time. And in terms of landscape architecture, we were thinking even areas. Like, what if you create a rock garden and you name it up yourself? So there are many naming opportunities on campus that we take advantage and many that we don't. The foundation was suggesting, hey, we sometimes build new buildings and don't name the spaces, which I thought was interesting because it seems like we do, but apparently we don't. And let me tell you, I've seen people name the beam in the kitchen of the this, the that, the other, right? So people would like a piece of architecture named after them. Okay, so those are those sorts of things. On the other side, the PR people are looking at what is the perspective people have, or I'm sorry, the perception people have of UNM. So some of our regents don't think we have a very good perspective, but many people think we have a good one. How do we change that? How do we look differently to the outside world? So let me pause for a minute. Any quick responses to those sorts of things? Has anyone thought about these in their colleges? Anybody? Nobody? Are you not asked to brainstorm in your colleges? Is that, Carla, are you?
We've talked about doing some online certificate
in nursing?
In occupational therapy.
So that would be great. All right, let me use that as a segue then, but please chime in if someone does come up with a brilliant idea. So how many years have you been a senator and heard me talk about Academics Within Borders? The old senators are like, yeah, we don't think it's ever happening. It's happening. 2 weeks ago, I went with the blessing of the president and the provost, but honestly, I didn't tell them I was going. I just went. I spent my own money, and I'm saying that not because I want you to be proud of me, but because I believe in it, and I didn't want to wait for someone to fund it. So it wasn't a lot of money. It was a hotel room and some gas. I went to Farmington, and I met with... Why are you laughing? It was a beautiful drive, by the way, but do not break down on the way from there to there. There's nothing there. Cuba and one casino, I think. So I met with the mayor of Farmington. I met with the president of San Juan Community College, the city manager, the economic development manager, the CEO of the hospital, the president of the hospital. I've already made one connection there between their hospital and Mike Richards and ours for telemedicine. So I'm very excited. I'm looking for low-hanging fruit immediately, right? Anything we can do immediately, not these long-term projects that go on forever. And the most interesting one, really, was the school superintendent. So here's the need I see, and I would like you all to think about this, although I'm moving in certain venues already. The high schools there are in the middle of a redesign campaign of their curricula for high school students to prepare them for colleges. And they're working with Johns Hopkins. It's kind of a national thing. It's very interesting. So I met a lot of cool professors. I did say to someone, and please don't think me irreverent for using this parallel, I felt like I had one loaf of bread for 900 hungry people, and I'm not Jesus. Do you understand? I really was like, I don't know how small I can, but it was invigorating to feel that there's stuff we could do. The idea, let me remind you if you don't remember, is that UNM is an intellectual, a cultural, and a social resource for the community. We have things that can help other people. We can also be helped by them. Their people can infuse us. So here's what I learned. Only 9% of the graduates of the college there go on. It's an associate's degree. So that's 91% of their students could be coming here or going somewhere. So there are a lot of things that stand in the way of this. And some of them, I have to be honest, as a New Yorker, I don't relate to, but I have to acknowledge that some of them never leave Farmington to go to Aztec. They simply don't drive 14 miles. So we need to make it accessible for them. So here's where I am. In the last 2 weeks in February, President Stokes and President Pendergrass from the college and myself are trying to pick a day in the end of February when they've done some park tests or whatever the horrible tests that they have to do to have a UNM day. And so it's not to celebrate us. It's to reach out. And what they need is, I really believe in this, that it's so funny that it's so clear and so simple, and yet we don't do it. They need to see someone from your department, my department, and go, well, I could do this. I remember my colleague Coffee wants to go, not as a doctor, as in let me practice medicine on you, but he wants to go to say, you could be a doctor. Here's what a doctor looks like. And if you know Coffee, he's got a ponytail. I mean, we are accessible. So we can encourage them to go on to school. Forget the brilliant things we have to teach them. So I'm envisioning in my head 5-minute quote TED Talks from people who have a desire to do that. And we spend the day there and we do outreach. Someone suggested to me yesterday in public administration, I did meet with the head of them, and he said, you should talk to the families while you're there. I thought, well, that's a brilliant idea. So there's a 3-parter to this one. We go there, then we bring them here for one day. And by them, it's to be determined by the college. You know, I'm not going to micromanage. We bring select students here so they see what it looks like. They survive the drift, you know, the drive there and back. They can do it. And then maybe during the summer, there's a course there. So what I learned from those teachers is that they need mini certificates. Now, there's a little, I'm just being very brutally honest with you, so this will be hashed out later, right? So I'm just sharing with you what I learned. The PED is not always in favor of new certificates, but Farmington has a very good relationship with them, and they've been convincing them that these are useful, and that if their teachers get them in the Four Corners regions, they can use them. So the example was given to me, a principal said, look, I want my math teacher to have a basic computer one. Now, I'm kind of a Luddite, so I'm like, oh, you know, how to turn on the computer and off. And that's definitely not what they were looking for. They were looking for programming, like languages. Well, I had to have that clarified. So for me, basic is, you know, how do you cut and paste? So, sorry, I'm a little below the high school since there. I'll probably take this class. But I met with Christos yesterday, the dean of engineering, and he loved this. He loved all the ideas we were doing, and he's willing to go out there with me and do this. He even did something really interesting, if I can brag about engineering. Last summer, I don't know if you knew this, Terry, $100,000 or something they spent on, they brought high school teachers in, paid them $600, $599, if there's a limit, to study computers for a week with them. I mean, I thought that was brilliant. And I'm trying to keep low cost to the university. I'm not saying we pay anyone for anything. In fact, Gene, the superintendent, said, no, we can get Title II, Title IX money to help pay for these classes. And my long-term idea is that these classes we design are marketable on a larger basis eventually. So I see the same Raj in business. You know, so I'm talking to Craig, talking to Brian Gillespie about how we can do entrepreneurships. And today I was on the phone with the city manager there. They want to work with the public administration area on how they can do MPAs or interns with them. So we're kind of starting already. It's kind of a one-woman project right now. So anyone who's interested in helping, when we go on, quote, the bus, there'll be more people. But right now it's just a solo act. So any thoughts? Yeah.
Yeah, the college nursing has, for several years now, call it NMEC, New Mexico Nursing Education Consortium. And basically it's an articulation agreement with the NSU College of Nursing, and I think it's 6 or 7 of the public colleges. So San Juan is one of them. So primarily when folks go in for their ABN for nursing, they're with one single admission also admitting to UNM, the contest for their business.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, you guys are way ahead of us on pretty much everything. Online
that's
classes
been
and
really over.
Okay, great.
And some of our faculty also share provide some support.
Maybe we could speak then on how we could either continue that or use it as a model.
Yeah, there's better folks at the college that know this way than
okay.
I.
All right, you hook me up with them. Okay, yes. And then Ron.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I know that you probably didn't mean this in that way, but when you were talking about your drive to Farmington, there's nothing in between here and there. I really think we have to be conscientious that majority of New Mexico is rural, and so that is a community for many of our students and the communities that are there. So you actually pass many tribal communities.
And I didn't see a single one, and that's all
no,
I meant.
You
yeah.
pass chapter houses, you pass the Hickory Tribe, you pass the Zio Pueblo, you
cool.
pass the Jemez Pueblo. So I think you really have to be conscious of how you
thank you for telling me, yeah.
The nothingness,
yes.
if that means something to
me. Okay, got it, totally appreciate that, thank
and
you.
And also the one thing that you're thinking of, I think we also have to be more strategic in how to make our relationships
it's not a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Totally
no,
agree.
Saying.
Yeah, thanks for both of those comments. What I really meant was from a driving perspective, it felt like if I broke down, I didn't see any houses for a long time. That's what I meant. But thank you for telling me that. Yeah, I was a little worried about my car, I'll be honest. So I think my fear about that. But no, I don't intend this as a one-stop. In fact, we won't leave the community until we feel we've solidified connections. And the original plan was that the faculty would go initially and the students would go eventually. It's a little more complex than that. It's certainly more than 2 trips. So thanks for telling me. Appreciate it. Raj?
So I think we probably had some of the conversation when I served on set operations team and that. And even last meeting, people said we need to serve New Mexico and see what population want. I think that's kind of a reverse way to look at it, because you are thinking that what population wants, we create the program, and guess what? The economy is going to change, and we will always be reacting. And we were reacting when enrollments declined, and people made a big hue and cry about enrollment decline, and we're going to do these things, and guess what? We did nothing. Whatever happened, we are back in the same cycle. We are debating exact same stuff, and we have no plan. So we probably will go back to the same thing. And in your terms of reaching out to individual communities and offering certificate, I don't think that's what we should be doing. Mm-hmm. Again, that's my view. The reason it's my view, because there are other institutions in the state which can serve. If we claim ourselves to be the flagship university, we need to create something, a more vision, which says this is what New Mexico needs versus just adapting to it.
And can you see the possibility for both, Raj? Can you see that we don't just lay back and say, yeah, whatever you want, that we create, and we are the leadership in research. But I would hate to go into a community and say, this is what you need. That's just the wrong approach.
See, every area, if you look at the history of every area which has developed because of the university, those are the areas which have said, there is nothing here. We lead the development. We just don't see what's here, what's not there, and we react to it. That's not how you do it. When we look at the future, we are going to create future by something new, something anticipating. If you are seeing what's there, that's like past way of looking, what's there. Now I'm going to create something for that which is there. And guess what? Pretty soon that thing
that's
is going
obsolete,
to change.
Right. Well, just so you know, the mayor, for instance, was looking in the future. He wasn't looking at, hey, we need to fix the past. He's looking at things like the coal plants are closing in the near future. 1,500 jobs are going to be gone. How do we face the future? So he doesn't know what he wants, but he knows what the need will be. So he's looking
ahead.
So
for us, the thing we should be looking at, why is it that every time we face this boom and bust cycle at UNF, if enrollment is going, what is the solution? Every time we have the same thing, okay, our demographics are not supportive. But we know that for a long time. What are we doing
sure.
that demographic is not supportive? I don't see what are we doing. Like every time we are going to use the same excuse, same thing, oh, the state legislature is not giving us more money.
Right. Yeah, we know.
We know that's a long time. It's
yeah.
not going up.
Okay.
So we
Thank
should
you,
be reacting to it.
Carla.
I don't think it's an either or proper proposition. I think that some of the first steps are these more tentative things where you're trying to reach out and establish relationships. Now you know the mayor of Farmington, you know, and that's where it starts, and that's, I think, the foothold you get that gets you to the more figuring out what the systemic thing is and the solutions.
Thanks, Charlotte. I'm going from that. I appreciate, though, Raj, you have the long term. Some of my team had that thought, too. But you've got to start with relationships and just reaching out. You just don't start with the
So
other.
Who do you think is the best person to build a relationship? Maybe a faculty who's from that area. Like, we have a faculty from Mora, right?
Yeah.
Great person,
yeah,
very strong connected. So
yeah.
I can go there, do a lip service one day, but I'm not going to build a relationship. I am still an outsider.
Yeah.
Like, the way she said, if a person is from that area, your job should be, okay, let's figure out the person. And then try to persuade that person to go.
In Farmington, I have to tell you, they were very open. It didn't feel like I was invading and I was in the wrong place. I think it's true. At the Hemis Pueblo, I would meet someone from Hemis to go. You know, that's a different philosophy. But Farmington, I think we have a good connection with Farmington. And I actually got help from ex-regent Jack Fortner also. And so that we had a connection. There was a local connection there. So I can say it's only been positive. Any other thoughts? Because this obviously now I've droned on and on too long. Anything else? All right. So I'll keep you posted. All right. And may I steal your agenda? Poor Jason. He's never got to keep his agenda the whole meeting. The provost report. I saw him.
President.
President's report. Sorry, I skipped over you. Please.
All right.
Because I saw mine.
I don't know. Good
Thank
afternoon,
you.
Everyone. I will keep my comments brief. I have started my traveling office hours. Many of you know about my traveling office hours.
Okay,
good. Some of you do. First one was in biology. I met so many faculty, some staff, some graduate students. It was fabulous. Second one was history. Tamara was in Zimmerman Library, and so I'm really, really pleased with how well this is going, and I intend to continue it throughout this year, and hopefully it will be a good thing, and I'll hit where you are at some point, I hope, each of you, sometime during this year. I wanted to mention, you probably know, we launched the Grand Challenges. It was very well attended. I think people are excited about what this could become. But there's a lot of work to be done between now and when those Grand Challenges are identified. I'm not sure how many in this room were participating in that, but I do hope that it brings some excitement to campus in terms of thinking about where we can be headed. Yeah, there was a discussion earlier or a comment earlier about, you know, the boom and bust, and of course, having been here almost 9 months, I'm not as familiar with the ebb and flow of the way things go here at UNM and in New Mexico. So I know that we have this enrollment management task force with a lot of groups working. I do hope that we're looking proactively into the future and really taking charge of this. And not continuing to, what was it, do, not really change anything or do nothing. It seems to me that, you know, this is a moment when we do have to look and recognize that there are some challenges that are not ever going away, and so we need to think about what we're going to do about that. So I'm excited to find out more about what the Enrollment Management Task Force will end up bringing forward as recommendations. I thought I would mention legislative priorities. Not all of them, but the ones that I think are the biggest and what you might be most interested in. Of course, we are looking for full funding of the formula. Most of the funding that we get from the legislature is actually in the form of this performance-related funding, and it's tied to about four categories. And we are, you know, asking for a bigger additional funding related to that formula. And so that, you know, is going to be the ask, and it won't be just the ask of UNM. UNM works with the other four-year universities to go forward with these priorities. And so the formula is the formula, and it affects all the institutions, and so... it is a, you know, a big pot and something that we are going to be focused on, both here at UNM, but also for all the council presidents. Another thing that we are focused on as a priority is compensation funding. So we're making the case that we really haven't had a good raise pool at UNM for a number of years, and that in a time when we know there is additional funding available that is recurring and also one-time funding available, but it's the recurring funding, of course, that really matters when we're talking about compensation packages. But we're, every president in the Council of Presidents shares with me a belief that we absolutely must ask for a significant raise pool for faculty and staff. And so that is really high on our priority list. We have been challenged at UNM more than most other institutions by the way in which the raise pool is calculated. So you've probably heard this before. I have some vague memory of a discussion back in the spring that because so many of our faculty and staff are not actually on ING funding, our raise pool for UNM is calculated based on just those individuals that are funded via ING. So if we say we have a 4% raise pool, we don't get the funding to cover everybody. So we're actually trying to explain what an impact that is and ask for some understanding. Now, I don't know how far we'll get, but we're making the case for asking the legislature to recognize the breadth of the people that work here and fund accordingly. We're also asking with a significant amount of one-time funding that's available, we've made a priority asking for matching funds from the state for donor contributions. And that is something that works beautifully when there is one-time funding available, and then when it's not available, you don't get the match. But it's a great way to really leverage the private support that we can get. There was the mention of is it NMNIC, the New Mexico Nursing Education Consortium, or that's one of the priorities is getting funding for that. We have a number of research and public service projects that we're going forward to the legislature with, and I won't go into any detail about those. It's a severance tax bond year, so the learning environment upgrades and an ROTC phase two are part of main campus proposals, and for the HSC, a movement disorder center and an OMI scanner. So those are big projects that we're taking to the legislature. This isn't everything. We are also trying to get an understanding of how the medical school is funded for ING. There's always been a bit of an issue with that. So we've been talking to members of the legislature, and I've been having lots of meetings with people. This morning had a breakfast with three new legislators that are just starting off and going to Santa Fe a lot, meeting with people here. But these are the things we're talking about when we talk to people in the legislature. I had a really, I think, successful tribal council with leaders of all the Native American groups in New Mexico. Most were represented. We had a long, few-hour conversation about the needs of our various tribal groups and the things that they see as challenges. And so we will be going back to them with some information based on the conversations that we had with them about what we need to do at UNM. And then tomorrow I have an All Pueblo Council to talk about some similar issues. And so we've got a lot going on there. Today I'm hosting a neighborhood association reception at University House because we live in this neighborhood, and apparently our neighborhoods around us, and many of you probably live in those neighborhoods, they care about what we're doing at UNM. So that's something I'll be doing later today. Of course, our searches continue to be underway, so all of those are launched: Provost, Senior Vice President of Finance Administration, Equity and Inclusion, and I appreciate those who are serving on the search committees. That's really all I was going to mention, but I'm happy to take your questions.
It's good to have a linear thinker in our midst. Question for the President.
Have you had an opportunity to meet with the governor-elect?
Not yet, but it's being set up.
Okay.
I'm also, I have recommendations for student regents from ASUNM and GPSA. And so I'm going to interview the people they've recommended, and then I need to give to the governor the recommendations related to the student regents and a copy of the Constitution where it does say that a student regent is supposed to be selected from a group, a list provided by the president of UNM. So we'll see how that goes. I also am including in my letter information about what the AGB, the Governing Boards Association, says about what to look for in governing boards and what the characteristics of effective members of the board are. So I'll be interested to hear I won't be here for the conversation, but I'll be interested to hear the outcome of the conversation that you have today about that.
Yeah. Other questions?
Yeah.
I mean, it's more connected to what you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. It's about and asking us.
Yeah.
That I thought of. And I just wanted to know if there is some kind of top-down approach to funding strategy. If there's like an incentive to build up things that are more strategic rather than sort of one-off organizations. From the provost office and president's office, anybody. So, I mean, I think we could each come up with small solutions like meeting opportunities, but it seems like if we are this desperately in need of money, and it's as bad as it's always been organized, I just don't know enough about what's being proposed, but is there some top-down strategy about how to raise money?
Sounds like the redesign effort, right?
Well, I think the redesign effort is part of it. We're going to be launching a strategic process or strategic directions, which should guide the priorities that we would set. The grand challenges are in part intended to make us competitive for federal funding and state funding, but also for donors. And we are currently doing a search for the leader of the foundation. And right now, our foundation raises it's about $80 million a year. Now, what the problem with that is, it's not all $80 million that comes in the door. I mean, we're talking about some things that are estate plans and et cetera. But what I'm expecting is that, you know, we will over the next year or so begin the process of we don't call them campaigns anymore, mm-hmm. but a process of setting a new goal for fundraising. And that is going to end up, it won't be a top-down approach. I mean, of course, we at the top levels will be involved very much in it, but the way in which you set goals for that is you really have to have the participation of the campus in identifying what the strategic needs are and where we should make best investments. Mm-hmm. I'll also say that, you know, I've had some interesting conversations lately about a strategy by which, we've always depended on the legislature, and that will never change. Public universities will always be highly dependent on legislators. But strategies that other institutions have begun to use really involve more involvement with the business communities in figuring out other avenues of funding. And so, those are the things that are on my mind and part of what we're going to need to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the funding formula. Specifically, I'm thinking about how equity could be built into that funding formula, because currently there's a measure of low-income students, and that's being used as a proxy for the racial achievement gap. Not the gender achievement gap, but the empirical evidence do not support that. So is there a way to include a measure of reducing equity so that we, in six-year graduation rates, are actually making a dent on those things?
So that is part of what is being discussed. Terry will probably have to ask Terry to be more specific about what we are using in the formula. I will tell you that right now we are trying to encourage little change in the funding formula. Because if you keep changing the bar on how people earn this performance funding, it makes it difficult for institutions to respond effectively. And yet, for me, closing that achievement gap, the gap in retention and graduation for everyone on campus, is one of my really important priorities. And so I know that there is conversation about rewarding institutions that do that. So I'm not sure where that conversation is going to land, but I know it is under discussion.
Yes?
Does the UNM finalize its recommendations to the ERB on the, there's going to be changes, obviously, on the legislator, and I know UNM is going to have the recommendations of what?
Yeah. You know, that I remember that we did kind of a survey of campus to get, I don't know who all participated in that, to get thoughts about what we should and shouldn't do. What I understand has kind of been concluded is we support a 3% increase in the employer contribution spread over the next 3 years, but we would hope for legislative support in funding that increased employer contribution. And that, at this point, is the only thing that UNM has put out there.
Yes. So some of the other ones that may have been the questionable one. They had an opportunity to participate in that survey.
Okay. Yeah. It's going to be, I have no idea where all this is going to land in the legislature with regard to ERB. It's going to be tough. And, we'll see whether anything actually gets done in this next legislative session, given the many other issues statewide that a new administration is going to need to tackle.
Thank you, President Stokes. I appreciate it. You know, I neglected to mention something important, actually, that happened yesterday. We had the Governmental Relations Committee did the capital outlay competition, and we had four groups that participated. And, we just actually came to a decision recently. So the two that rose to the top were the art department and the English department. The art department had safety issues, lighting issues, flooring issues. It's a kind of a scary building. And the English department had really some of the most disreputable bathrooms you'll ever see. And they've been this way for years. So we had a hard time. I wouldn't say the committee was split. It was that we really saw the merits of both sides. So I'll tell you what I did. I tried to leverage a little bit the fact that we were unhappy with the state of BNR, right, building renewal and renovation, and then why it would take so long. So I can't say we got a guarantee, because there are no guarantees. If BNR funding gets cut as a result of the needs of the university, we can't say anything. But we decided to choose the art department, and we had this stipulation that the faculty senate would make a priority things like this, the English department's bathrooms. So I got a call yesterday, and I can't say it's a guarantee, but they are now on the list for next year, the bathrooms, for $250,000. And this comes up with here's the deal. Some of the bathrooms years ago in ANS, maybe this is too much information, TMI for you all, but were at a low level. They were $37,000 per bathroom in PCD's area, another area. So, but in this building, they were claiming that it would cost $80,000 to do it. So, and I'm happy to say this publicly, because I believe we should look into management fees that we use for this and the companies we hire, and I would turn to the architecture department, because the architects I talked to said, that's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. For four bathrooms, that's $320,000.
Unless they're plate gold.
Yeah, exactly. So I wonder, what I learned, President Stokes, maybe it's good I say this publicly, what I learned is that, and by the way, I could be misrepresenting this, so let's don't go crazy with this. But what I heard was that projects under $100,000 are funded, there's a management charge of 10%, and for over $100,000, it's a 6% fee. So I thought to myself in my pea brain, well, gosh, it's in my best interest as a manager to get a really high bid, because 10% of high is better than 10% of low, right? So I wonder about that, but I will say we're proud because of the stink we put up. At least the English department is now on the map. And actually, we're announcing it here for the first time. So, Scott, congratulations. The art department is the winner. No one knew this yet until just now. So, yay. And it was a great competition. Everyone had something of merit. We also considered, by the way, what the state would want to fund. And safety seemed maybe a priority over, ooh, that's a gross bathroom. Harder to sell that. And I think it may shame us. Why aren't we taking care of these things ourselves, right? So, thank you. I just wanted to say that. Okay. All right. Provost, it's your turn now. You're a lurker. Come join us, sir.
Greetings. What's going to be most useful? I'm glad to walk through kind of a quick run through things going on and then some discussion, or I can just stand for a conversation. What's going to be helpful?
I think to know what's going on, perhaps, okay. And maybe some budget things, because I skirted over it myself.
Okay, great. So there's a lot going on. As you saw in the newspaper recently, some complicated dynamics I was involved in from the Board of Regents and some ongoing commentary in the newspaper and elsewhere. No regrets, I think, that needed to be answered. And it sparked a conversation about what we do in this university in ways that I think is better than that conversation not happening. That's why I'm at on it. The trouble with that stuff, though, is it demoralizes everyone. It kind of pulls you down sometimes. So I want to highlight some of the really good things happening in the university right now as well. And I'll run through them quickly, and let's follow up with some of the more questions. A bunch of great faculty hiring going on out there now. We've chosen to manage the budget deficit in ways that allow us to continue to do the most important stuff we do, like hiring the next generation of faculty. And I want to especially emphasize the Native American cluster hire that we're doing. We've made some really great hires out of that already. And I think going public pretty soon are some more. And it's a potentially transformational moment in this university's relationship to tribes in New Mexico, I think. And I think that's the scale of some of this. And we're driving it on that phrase around equity and excellence, that it's about equity for tribal communities in New Mexico. But it's all about excellence in this university, and by framing it that way, helping attract some of the strongest and good scholars in the country in ways that we hope helps make UNM truly one of the top destination universities for both tribal scholars and folks working on tribal settings in this country and around the world. If we can do that in this state, in this context, I just think it's where we need to live as leaders, in part on that track. The grand challenges, things that you all know about, President Stokes mentioned, the only thing I would add is I think there's a perception out there among faculty, I'm hearing from some faculty, great initiative, producing all this dynamism, but at the end of the day, it's this competitive process, some people are going to lose, and I want to reframe that. My understanding of how that process works is that it's not we ask for all these proposals and three of them are declared winners and everybody else doesn't win. It's a more interesting intellectual project than that. It's, yes, three of them sort of become core to defining the central terrain of the grand challenges, but then we challenge the leadership of those to think at a broader, more synthetic, inductive kind of a level. What are the other proposals that are submitted that actually do relate to your proposal that you didn't think of collaborating with that may allow more collaborative terrain? The challenge in the grand challenges is to define things at a scale that are both actionable through deep research and policy intervention, but are also of a scale that they draw on the kind of broad insight across a whole bunch of disciplines. The first set of proposals we get are a first take at that, but then part of the way the process is designed is to challenge the proposers to think yet more broadly. You were thinking about the broad set of people working on water resources in engineering and in water management. But what about those people thinking about the way that different communities in New Mexico think about water differently? You haven't brought them into this process and sort of invite them to think more broadly, think more abstractly, think more synthetically, and redefine the challenges at another level. On that model, it's not, you know, three of them win and everybody else loses. It's three of them help define the initiative going forward, but then they also invite more collaboration from more settings from around the universe. It becomes a much more collaborative process. We've just launched a kind of speakers bureau. Some of you have signed up for this already. This addresses some of the concern. You know, how do we really build the relationship around the state? I think part of that is the bus tour that the Faculty Senate's driving. Part of it is also getting faculty, staff, students with ties to local communities out there in front of those local communities in Albuquerque. And it's not just high schools, right? It's neighborhood associations, it's religious congregations, it's any setting that they think they can pull together 50 potential college students. We want to try to get somebody from UNM in front of them, mm-hmm. helping spur students' imaginations about why UNM makes sense, why higher education makes sense. I've been amazed by the response to that request. Within hours, we had 48 people signed up. The challenge is getting those people into the right settings. Right. And we're going to work with Mission Graduate, United Way, here locally. We're going to work with different departments that have ties in the community to get you or people you know kind of dynamic 10-minute presentation mm-hmm. that helps students imagine themselves. What else? The redesign effort, much hyped over the last year. We've had to slow down a bit at the start of this academic year. Just met with the redesign leadership folks to think about how do we build off of that to really move on some of those ideas in ways that flow into the president's strategic planning process beyond 2020, also flow into the existing strategic plan, the UNM 2020 strategic plan, and draw on the good ideas there to help UNM position itself in some new ways. I do think Raj's point about that the president works on, I work on, the president of the Faculty Senate works on, don't think this isn't on our radar. But that vision piece, how do we tell the story of UNM and where we're going in ways that are really powerful to help generate new kinds of funding, both from the legislature, but also from private donors, also from corporate donors, and frankly from federal funders and foundations. So the whole language around the University for New Mexico, really working on equity and excellence. I think that's both the right thing to do. It's also a strategic thing about how we fund the mission of this university and this university. I've been meeting with the Faculty Senate IT Committee about possibilities for finding ways technologically to lower the burden on faculty for reporting about workload, about teaching, about research, about community engagement, about internet, right? We ask faculty to report in all these different ways. We had some really good conversations with the Faculty Senate IT Committee. We're working on this across the OVPR office and my office to frame what that could look like. And importantly, what a data governance structure for that is that lends itself to all the good uses of that kind of data and undercuts all the ways that that data can be used in really stupid ways, right? Sorry. One could all too easily use that kind of database to simply rank faculty on how many publications you published last. It's been used this way in the United Kingdom, right? Mm. And the trouble is, what that does is incentivize. Instead of you publishing that world transformative article in the top journal in your field, all the incentive then is to break it up into eight tiny articles that have no impact and nobody reads, but if all anybody's doing is counting articles, that's what you reward. And we're determined, if we go down this road, to reward the right kind of intellectually ambitious stuff that changes New Mexico, changes students' lives. That's the way to use this. And unburden faculty from the crazy reporting burden that, because we still do so much on paper right now, we ask you to report on all your research productivity last year. And then some special request comes and we put out a call, please report in on all your community engagement last year. And then another request comes in, and please also report in on your international activity. Right? And that, in a modern technological age, we can do much better than that. We're moving that. Okay, that's some good, interesting stuff. I think that's enough.
Questions for the provost regarding these or other thoughts you have?
Oh, you are so informative. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about dementia. There's more personal material, so I wonder if I can
Sure. Good instincts, right? When there is a more individual question, better not to take it for this
time. Rich appreciates time savers. Okay, I think that's good then, okay. Right? Yeah, thank you.
Good luck in the semester, gang. It's a high-pressure time.
It's a hard time, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, President Lapp.
Yes, sir. Thanks, everybody. Okay, I'm going to be Finney Coleman today because he's not with us. So use your imaginations. I'm going to present the fall 2018 degree candidates. Are they going to go on the screen? Oh, they're up here. And if you have a privacy one, if you need to see it, you can look at it there, but you may not make it out of the room. So there's some people that, you know, don't want their name put out there. So this comes as a motion from Ops, so I need a second. Thanks, John. I'm staring at John. Thank you, Raj. All right, all in favor? Opposed? Abstentions. Okay. And lastly, we're going to approve, God help you, it's the blue and the green. Finney has a color coding that we don't quite understand, but the blue and the green we know means they are definitely on those committees. We've done these before. For some reason, some of these are new and some not. So because he's not here, we have to do the whole thing. So it comes as a motion from Ops. I'd like a second to approve this membership, committee membership. Thank you very much. All in favor? Thank you. Any opposed? Abstentions. All right, that's our work is done there. Yes?
Is there a way to get copies of these before we just pass them through?
Isn't it on the...
It's
what you should be reading it online.
It's right here.
Okay. Yeah, it's on the agenda.
Minutes, well, attendance, matrix,
right.
Agenda.
Okay. They have the names and people. We have to do research on who is actually represented from which communities and all of that. So
we've never done that.
We don't break down that for you. It's just the names on the committee. Yeah.
But I know it'd be nice to have that information.
Okay. Well, we can talk to
them. The committee individuals are based on the charge of the committee, so the charge really
dictates
tells us dictates the membership.
Certain committees are open to any faculty, and certain have, like the curriculum committee, we represent the whole, schools and colleges. So you could go and look at that charge if you wanted to see that, who was from where.
So I'm asking for a breakdown of the race and
Okay, we can discuss it. I don't know. We've never done that before, so that would be a whole nother. I have to defer to my committee for that.
So I would argue that that's an incredibly important thing because, as you know, especially a committee like tenure and promotion, we need to have a diversity.
We don't put
of
that up.
Voices.
That's an election, though. That's completely
yeah.
right.
different.
That's totally
I'm just
separate,
saying,
yeah.
as an example, in faculty governance, we definitely need to be attentive to issues of equity and inclusion and making sure that multiple voices and just beyond the discipline are present making decisions about faculty governance. So I would argue that I want to support Robin's point.
So you guys, let me know what's possible on that. Yeah. That'll be a project, I know. That's fine. That's exactly right.
And if
I
we
wish
have another
it was so
criteria,
competitive that we were, you know, turning people away, but we're usually begging people to join committees. So there's
well,
certain
yeah.
committees that everybody wants to be on. I know that most people in my position, when I was staffing it, I didn't staff it this year because it's the presidential election, try to get a mixture of men and women. I remember my predecessor had put apparently too many women on, so I'd be getting calls from women going, there are no men on this committee. I'm like, oh my God. So then I put more men on the committee. So I think we have done the best we can, but not saying we can't broadcast it. It'd just take a little longer. Okay, so now, Elisha, are you here?
Yes,
and Terry. So these are two different things on item number 8, digital credentials and then badging endorsement.
The second
right?
one is open education.
Oh, no, we
yeah.
don't need that. Open what?
Educational resources.
That was me, sorry.
Educational resources. Okay, so shall we start with the first then?
Yes.
So Elisha Allen is the director of our IT core services.
This one?
For Active Technology, but Terry's going to start.
Oh, Terry's starting. Great.
Thank you, President Pyle.
Yes, sir.
So this is just an information item that we had suggested, I had suggested to President Pyle that Faculty Senate needed to weigh in on this opportunity. We've explored digital badging for multiple years at UNM as it has evolved, and you read about things like blockchain technology and employers accessing badging at institutions to look for credentials. Micro-credentials that Pamela mentioned for teachers is really a component of digital badging. There's pretty much endless opportunities in this realm. Today I'm speaking on behalf of the academic records component of the university, the registrar's office, because you know that's where we keep transcripts and grades and the official academic records of the university. But before we would want to start storing digital badging or endorsing those kinds of credentials, I believe it should be a Faculty Senate-driven initiative with some organization and structure to make it meaningful. So the reason is because digital badging could be so ubiquitous that anyone here could create a badge opportunity with a multiple number of platforms out there to from Mozilla Open Badging to the system that we have deployed. And it can mean a lot of things. You know, you could have it for attending class, you could have it for completing some assignments, you could have it for, you know, people cleaning the bathrooms very well. It just, you know, there's not a limitation in how you can create digital badging. So in the absence of some kind of structure or, you know, manifest that says, look, the university wants to endorse these academic credentials in this manner, and they should be, this isn't a 1 day or 1 week or 1 year process. It would need much more thorough review for us to put it out on our academic platform. It, you know, some schools and colleges already do it. Engineering does it. A lot of co-curricular functions may do it where they get a leadership badge or they get, you know, a mini credential in globalization or internationalization or equity and inclusion. There's just limitless opportunities. So Elisha's going to talk a little bit more. I think we can go to the next slide now, Kenny. I've covered probably a lot of this. This is just a brief description of what I've described. Again, we do have a platform. Elisha from IT, the director of IT operations, has a platform, or there's a platform here the university has available, and that's strictly an IT infrastructure component where the security, the availability, how we make it available for employers or graduate schools would be a partnership with IT, and yet the structure, particularly from the academic record component that we manage in the registrar's area at the direction of the faculty, is a long ways from being established. It just, there is no established structure. You can do it a number of different ways, and so that's kind of our big challenge to put boards in front of the faculty senate today. So go ahead, Elijah. I don't know. You go on the faculty part. You want to take on this part, or just want to get to the
maybe we can.
Okay,
however you like.
Okay, go ahead. You want to cover this part.
So, not to repeat things that Terry said, but the digital badges and credentials are essentially just electronic means of delivering the paper credentials that you're already familiar with. Some of the differences or potential differences here are that the learner would own it and be able to share those credentials once they were awarded. They wouldn't have to necessarily go back to the registrar's office and say, I need an official copy of my transcript. They have an encrypted version of that that they can share. Now, it is permanent. An institution goes out of business, hopefully that's the UNM. But you get to keep that record. And we have I've tried to hire people where they have a bachelor's degree from an institution in California that no longer exists. And so trying to verify that can be difficult. They could be expired or revoked if the institution chose to. Sometimes there's an academic integrity question or something like that where you would need to revoke a degree. Or something that maybe requires annual renewal, so you could expire those credentials. But the key there is that it's very tightly bound to the individual's identity. It's verifiable and secure. It can't be altered without it, that being obvious to people reviewing those credentials. Why and why now? There's already a lot of initiatives on campus around this. They're somewhat distributed and dispersed. Everything from continuing education, Anderson School, that want to start badging some non-credit activities, to the School of Engineering has an NSF grant where they've written into this grant that they will certify with badges certain soft skills that they know employers are looking for. This could be something like teamwork or presentation and communication skills. The key here is that this NSF grant isn't just awarding a badge that says, yes, I think that this is true. They're attaching pieces of evidence that students would have submitted in the course of their studies throughout the curriculum that would be in a portfolio piece and tied to this badge so that when somebody looking at this badge wants to make an evaluation, they can see for themselves, the institution believes that to be true, and here's some evidence. Graduate studies and the Center for Teaching and Learning are interested in using these technologies for providing faculty with badges and certificates for professional development activities. But this is an opportunity for UNM to show some leadership and define the direction, both institutionally and, I think, across the state. Many other institutions already working on this, and similar to UNM, this is from everything from non-credit credentials, sort of micro-credentials or certificates, to sharing of diplomas and academic transcripts. The way this kind of works is the institution, UNM in this case, can award a badge to a recipient. Inside that badge, there are certain metadata that could contain links to a profile or a portfolio piece and other sources of evidence. The displayer is essentially a small application that the recipient can use to communicate that credential to a future employer or college admissions office. When the consumer or the future employer looks at that badge, there's a verification process that goes back to the institution to verify that that is a valid credential. So there is a variety of data inside that badge. It's not just a sticker that you would stick on your LinkedIn profile. It does have all this metadata that says who issued it, what the criteria was for earning that credential, expiration date, if any, et cetera. So the immediate opportunities, I think, are specific to those continuing education, non-credit activities, as well as, to a certain extent, the College of or School of Engineering request for incorporating this into their curriculum. The longer-term opportunities is, do we want to look at transcripts, and do we want to look at diplomas using this technology? CNM has engaged IBM to help them develop this for CNM. They have invited UNM to participate in that process. We're still looking at what that would mean for UNM, so no decision has made there. And I think to Terry's point, this is why we're looking for involvement from the Faculty Senate in this conversation.
I'm asking for
it would take some investment to move academic records to, you know, a blockchain infrastructure. Okay. But IBM as a partner in all that.
Nora?
I think I have a similar concern from the student's perspective. So you said this possibility of that might sort of radar out. Because I'm just speaking from faculty experience, we are going through an accreditation moment, so I have the graduates from my institution at 20 years old, this BS is 20. And so I'm just wondering, is this going to be a thing that students have to pay a certain amount every year to take along with this application for the possibility of access to this?
So first, when I was talking about academic or annual renewal, I was speaking more in terms of something like our annual safety training that we have to take. That's something that if we were to use this technology as a badge, we could say, at the end of December, your certification for annual safety training has expired and you need to take that again. That's the renewal that I was talking about. In terms of the fees, for the micro-credentials and badging service, we do have a quote from one vendor. This is not necessarily the vendor that we would go with. It's $3,000 a year for up to 1,000 students that we could award as many badges as we wanted to. But
yeah, I guess follow-up question. How do these badges intersect with curriculum? Like, how do I identify who gets what badges in the classification? Am I required to go badge certain?
That's where I think we go back to
the question. Yeah, it's a good question. That sounds so overwhelming, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys,
that's a lot of work.
Yeah, is it the student who initiates, hey, like a badge in this, do I qualify? Or is it the teacher that says, hey, you qualify for a leadership badge?
That's what we're here to do. We could try to run that from a committee or something we're actually in a little bit of the ground floor. Only about 20% of institutions are doing badging now, but it's growing. And so many of the things that you talked about, though, revenue streams, some institutions are envisioning, a lifelong learner process for students, like for a subscription, you could get as many badges as you want.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about subscriptions and higher education, it starts to get real.
But that's the only way it would be, it's not for a student to pay a subscription just to be able to access the badge.
Okay.
It's like continuing education. If I wanted to get a badge in globalization, I may pay some fee for it. But they have access to it for lifelong. But the work you talked about, how do you structure this to where it's meaningful? And the value for this is for students because it's another way to show more credentials than a bachelor's degree. Along the way, you could say, four things show creative thinking, four things show something else, four things show foreign language. So that's a value for students. That's why more people are getting it.
Lee?
So is this only for main campus, or have you discussed this with HSC IT? Because I don't remember it coming up.
We have not talked to HSC yet. Certainly it could be a joint initiative.
What initiatives for everyone?
Okay, it may not be the way Dr. Larson envisions it, so you better talk to him.
No, go ahead. We set out two more people on this with us.
Okay, I'm wondering if the people that expressed interest or the units that expressed interest, if they have a number of online courses or continuing hybrid courses?
Primarily, I think the units that I mentioned these are on the ground courses.
Oh, they're face to face.
Oh,
okay.
That doesn't mean that this wouldn't be useful in an online context, but those specific groups that are for face to face.
Because the badging that I've kind of known about or have experienced myself have been online or hybrid courses, and those seem to lend themselves basically conducive to this.
Nancy, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering about the faculty oversight again in terms of who actually decides what counts as a badge. So I'm wondering if this is a substitute for certificates. Like, we created the race and social justice graduate certificate, and we're working on the second, the undergraduate one, but there are faculty who actually do research and teaching in this area that are deciding this is actually meeting the learning requirements and this is not. So how does that work with the badge?
Well, so
I'm not sure if it was answered.
Going back to that first statement about a badge being a digital equivalent of a paper certificate that you're offering now, certainly not IT. I don't think enrollment management is in the business of deciding what the curriculum is or
right.
what is mm-hmm. worthy of a badge. We're just saying, if you think of the analogy of a phone service, we'll provide dial tone here, right? So when you pick up the phone, you know you can make a call. If you've got curricular that you've approved as a certificate, whether that's your race and justice certificate or something else, and you wanted to provide a badge to accompany the physical certificate or the more traditional certificate, that's something that
So it's hard to answer, Nancy, because that's really why we're here. I mean, anything the university endorses, I would think, as this type of credential, starts with the faculty. And so, you know, there wouldn't be a badge in race, equity, and inclusion unless it was approved by the proper channels. It's kind of, the mini credentials, I consider it on the way to a certificate. I consider certificate, you know, a credential, and then a mini credential could be a subunit of that to some extent. So, but that's the dilemma, because if this platform is put out there, and even now someone else can go to a platform like probably Mozilla Open Badges or something and put up, here's my requirements for a badge, and people can be getting them. But for the university to endorse it, we need some standards and processes that the institutions.
And I have to say, I know I need to slow this down a little bit or speed it up for the next part, but I see that we made this an action item. I have to say, has anyone heard of this before?
No.
Neither I. I don't think we're ready to act on it, but we're opening the conversation. But, I mean, the questions that are being raised, we don't know how we'd implement it, how we'd do it. Great questions. I'm wondering, and I'm not interrupting the whole thing if you want to continue, but how do you see us proceeding so that we feel we get more information and can contribute it back to you? Would that be a committee you set up that some faculty join? Because I don't want to shoot it down. I don't know. Do you have a timeline that you needed us to?
I thought this was just going to be information.
Okay. For some reason, it's an action on
here.
I don't
know what the action would be.
That's what I didn't know either.
You know,
that's what I thought.
We have a platform.
Support going forward.
Okay. Rick was thinking it was support going forward. We may be able to offer that, but you're going to go forward either way. What do you think the next step for our involvement could be?
I think it's input from, you know, the faculty or a committee.
Yeah.
Like, you could say, well, this is a curriculum committee.
I thought of them initially.
And they could have a subcommittee.
But they're so busy.
We
do, but that's not so much academic as curriculum. Yeah.
I guess, but I would just say, if this is happening, if this isn't, we're asking whether it should or not, it just frankly is, then I think it is just my word. I do think having a faculty committee to talk about not only what their implications will be for the students, but what are the actual applications when they graduate? For architecture students, they show a portfolio to an employer. So there's leadership badge, their aesthetics badge, their, you know, critical thinking badge is embedded in their portfolio, so to speak, is embedded in their portfolio. So certainly for a college of design, as well as architecture, I'm not sure how these badges actually equate, because built into the language of our own discipline are these.
So, Nora, let me suggest that I might consider that we propose an ad hoc committee of the Senate. So rather than burdening one of our committees that is already overburdened, that we start. But I need then five members of this group to decide they'd like to be on the committee. I suppose it could be three. But unless you're responding to that, just wait a minute. So that would be my thought, that some of the people who are expressing interest in this could do some research. Jason and I were mumbling to ourselves about what other schools do or how we could do it. Does that sound like a reasonable...
Yeah.
Well, if it was too preliminary, you could delegate that to that group who's working on this to say, give us five best practices and five institutions. And
that's
models.
Fine, too. Or we could send a representative to that group.
Yes.
Would that be useful?
I'm very open to anything. You know, really what I'd like to avoid is multiple departments going in different directions, offering UNM badges or UNM-sanctioned badges at different levels without coordination, without faculty.
Well, we're still starting, so I don't think we're there yet. So that's a good idea. There are no faculty currently on your group, right?
Vanessa Spila is leading the one for School of Engineering, and so she's in year two of a 3-year NSF grant where she's already promised this, and so that's my biggest urgent.
Yes, we went through already. We're there already. Yeah. So maybe, I don't know, Nor, are you interested in being a person?
I'm super curious about this.
So I'm volunteering to join the group.
I think it's really interesting.
At least as a reference. Okay, sorry. You too?
I think it's like the way of the future. I think it would lend itself really well to the health sciences. I think we would be silly not to attend the CNF meetings and join it with them if we're going to be our conduit of students.
I'll get you their names.
Okay.
And then we'll okay, so I'm only rushing you because I'm rushing you.
I understand.
Is there something else you'd like to say?
This is it for badging. Can we go to OER real quick?
But can you do that pretty quickly?
I will do it as quickly
Thank
as possible.
Thank you. Sorry.
So I imagine many of you are already familiar with Open Educational Resources. just wanted to highlight some textbook affordability opportunities within UNM. If you're not familiar with OER, this is any openly licensed teaching research and learning resources. It could be a textbook, it could be videos, it could be supplemental materials. But over the last decade or more, there's been a lot of open material placed in the public domain that can be incorporated into classes. What a group of us have noticed, including the library and bookstore and accessibility services and others, is that there's a lot of opportunity there, but because of the way UNM is structured, it's often fallen through the cracks of who's going to support this and who will champion allocating resources to this to support faculty in adopting these kinds of materials in their classes if it meets with their instructional goals. Probably everyone's aware, very high cost of textbooks raised 4 times the rate of inflation over the last decade. Over $10 billion a year now spent by students on textbooks. On the open educational resources side, there's over a dozen states that have now passed legislation to provide state and institutional support to faculty who want to incorporate these kinds of materials into their classes. This could At some levels, it's simply making a definition for what open educational resources are. In some cases, it establishes grant programs that institutions can then use to provide stipends to faculty who want to incorporate this material in their curriculum. But obviously, there's work involved in evaluating the materials and figuring out how it fits into a curriculum. State of California redid this definition, and this definition was also adopted by Colorado and Texas and some others, which expands the definition to also include materials that the university has licensed. So if you look at our library, enormous resource there of textbooks, or not textbooks, but materials that students could access the university has already licensed. There has been some initiatives already at UNM in this regard. Inclusive access agreements have saved students about $1 million over the last couple of years by reducing the cost of textbooks. We've had individual faculty members experiment with this. And we started a cross-campus working group and a website to provide more information about how this could be done. Really, I'm just here to express some increase awareness of the opportunities here. We would like to provide more consistent support for faculty. There may be legislative opportunities, but if there are faculty members that would like to be involved in thinking about that, that would be very helpful. And the benefits here are just lowering the cost of attendance, increasing success for students that can't afford textbooks. There's been a number of studies shown to that effect. As I said, aligning our campus resources to support faculty when that makes sense for their curriculum and in terms of their own academic freedom. So that's it.
How many of you use this resource in some way or another? Yeah? Oh, okay. But not too many. Is this something that you don't use because you haven't heard about it or don't have access to? So
So maybe awareness is good. I'm wondering how to best get that out. Is that something you send out on a regular basis, or you know, how do you...
Well, so we are creating a website for this. The library is hiring an open educational resource librarian that can help with curation of materials. We'll be working with Erin Haney, Center for Teaching and Learning, to think about the pedagogy side of things. Very early, you know, in this journey at UNM, and I think the question is, you know, how do we proceed and how do we look for appropriate resources to support faculty who have the interest in pursuing this?
Questions? Thank you, Alicia. I think it's a good opening. I think we'll need you back probably as we go forward on it. But we'll reach out to you with our names.
Okay.
And anybody else before the end of the meeting or after, you can send me an email wanting to be involved with any of these initiatives. Thanks so much. Sorry
thank
to rush
you,
you at the end. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, so I'm going to take 10 minutes instead of 15 for this, so we stay relatively on time. We're about 10 minutes late, so my math is a little off. But so pretend we're the search firm, and we're pulling ourselves, as we did last time when we had the presidential search, provost, who were also the presidential search firm, querying us to characteristics we would like. Now, I have no way of guaranteeing that this will... I can guarantee that we will get this to someone. I can't guarantee that they will care. But I think it would behooves of us to say what we'd like and then be pissed that we don't get it, if we don't get it, rather than just say, well, whatever comes our way is what we'd like. So I wonder if we could take a moment to reflect on either, it could be personal characteristics, professional characteristics, embodiments of philosophies that we are looking for in our next Board of Regents. And 5 is a substantial number. We're not just getting 1 or 2. We are now altering the course and the shift in power on the board. And for those of us who've been intimately involved, you know, we know how important that is. So anyone who has an initial thought, I would appreciate it. Okay, Lee first, and then I can't see you back there, but then your next.
Okay,
week.
Yes.
Your next.
Candidate.
I can't see you, Ron, sorry.
Candidate should be absolutely absent of any conflicts of interest.
Yeah, that would be a change. Yeah, great. Yeah. Certainly monetary ones. Well, any kind, really, I guess you're right.
And they should not be politically connected.
Well, we ask. But they wouldn't get the job if they would. Robin, sorry, go.
I would recommend that we should have a diverse representation
on
the Board of Regents, because it's been obviously white.
Yep.
But the other part of that is that ML... and so I think that would be really nice to have that. But also, if they are not from a diverse background, have worked with diverse communities in some way. And I think that we definitely need that, because with all of the things that have happened within the last couple of years, it's really demonstrated there's a lack of understanding of our communities. And so I think that's why we need to have that representation.
Okay, great. I like that. Yeah.
Since the establishment of war, civil discourse.
Civil discourse. Right. Or at least the ability to shut your mouth. Yeah. You can't say something nice, right?
You're a credential.
Like a credentialist.
Right.
Don't need
it. You fail.
Can we give the other badges to
losers?
Well, I just want to build on what Robin said about the idea that we have to have representation from both rural and urban communities. I think we get confused about the fact that students don't just come from right around here, and rural is a cultural variant here, and so really push for that as well.
Okay, got it. Others? Mr. Rodden Edgerton, yeah, Rob.
I think what Raj and President Stokes were saying about, forward thinking, I think this is really important, because the economic development of our state is lagging nationally severely. And I think what I'm seeing on our board right now is people that are reacting to problems that come up. And that's not a good business plan. We need somebody with economic vision to look forward for driving this university forward.
Okay, great, yeah. And who can work with the president to develop it, right? And not just impose it.
Absolutely.
I would add that. Others?
I recall from either from long ago, you talked about even the possibility of the fact that the Senate members were like,
we've been trying for that for 100 years. Yeah. Well, we have to change the Constitution, and we can't get past the Rules Committee. So last year, it did make it past the Rules Committee, but then they didn't hear it. Lee and I have been involved in this for like 8 years.
It wasn't a great bill.
Yeah, it's a, we'll try, I agree. We'll keep saying it. I can't imagine why it's valid to have a student region and not a faculty. It makes zero sense to me. But yeah. Yeah. Mike, what do you got?
I was going to say, I'd love to see somebody with university experience.
Yeah, academic experience.
Some level of academic experience.
Or hospital experience, right?
Or hospital,
yeah.
University of
Providence. Right. Okay. Anyone else? I would encourage you to consider this. I know it's the last 2.5 weeks are hard, and I personally am against Thanksgiving because then I never want to come back after Thanksgiving, so I think we should just skip through it. But since we're here and we have to, somebody, I know, I won't be putting that out for a Senate motion, but could you write me a sentence? You just, Pamela, here's my characteristics, sign your name, that's it. I'd like to flesh this out. I mean, I'd really like it to be a document of some weight that I can hopefully give to someone who it matters, right? So just think about it and give it to me. Okay, we managed.
What time frame would you love that?
ASAP. I don't know if I'll ever get an audience with the person, but I will probably get one with someone under her. So, and hopefully I will get one. Yeah, Lee has, and you mean probably, and you have a way also. I'm putting out feelers in all ways. I think these people during the transition period are extremely busy. But I guess I want on their radar that this is one of the most important decisions they're going to make. And I want her to understand the weight of how the faculty feels about the determination they make will alter our course and therefore the state in some way or another. I mean, I can't put it strongly enough. So maybe we'll put an article in the paper, write a letter.
Do we have data from exit interviews for faculty who are leaving that suggest that the particular climate under which they have had to work with this Board of Regents has impacted our ability to retain good faculty?
Well, some of us are writing an HLC report, and we do HLC report, me and acronym, and we were surmising that the exodus from the deans of all the schools of medicine, nursing, pharmacy, basically had something to do with that climate. So I can't prove it, but I can suggest it.
Population health.
They were all, everybody just...
They all left.
They just left. Now, maybe they just got great jobs and the timing was bad. But if people are happy where they are, sometimes they don't start looking elsewhere, right? So yeah, it's a great point. Anybody else? No? Okay, thanks everybody. So we caught up a little bit. David Hansen, we have with us our chair of our, council chair of our Research and Creative Works Council. And he's also the chair of the Research Policy Committee, David Hansen, one of our hardest working people. Thank you for coming with us. And we all work hard, but some people go above and beyond, and you're one of them. So tell us what's going on in your council, and I'd like you to remind us of the effort you put into creating new awards, because they're still considering. Okay, got it.
So, the Research and Creative Works Council has... the Research Policy Committee in it, as the Research Allocations Committee, as the UNM Press and the Libraries Committees, so the four committees within the council. And what's fun is that I think we all have positive things that each committee has accomplished in the last year or so and moving forward. If you haven't seen last year, the Libraries Committee came up with a new student research award for students using research, using libraries intensively in a research in library area across campus. So if you haven't heard of that before, it's Jim and Mary Holzman award, and they had new awardees in 2018 and last year. It's a very new award.
Is there money with that one?
Yeah, they get like $500 or something like that to help with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And was it the second year of it or the first year?
The first, the next round will be in 2019.
Okay.
So encourage your students, undergraduates only.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, I think it's a great award. I mean, great to see it very broad. I think that, the UNM Press is trying to have some new ideas. I mean, with potentially to try to get some of our award winners from our other annual research lecture and community research lecture. Mm-hmm. Trying to push forward an idea right now on the ideas of having monographs that come out of those or other ways to highlight our research and use our press a bit more. So I think there's some new ideas that are developing. If you had thoughts about that, I would say contact myself or other folks. It's still very early stages, but it's nice to see some movement
going into it.
Research Allocation Committee with Kathy G has done a huge amount of work. They always do a lot of work, but I think they've been doing even more work for making the process better and really listening to feedback each year from faculty on things that need to be could be made better, and they're making it better. So I think the diversity of awards that are being supported are greater there, and the process for reviewing them and the training that the members of that committee have to go through to address them fairly and thoughtfully and review comments carefully is really stepped up. And so I think Kathy Lizard can be paid for doing excellent work.
They worked on feedback, right?
Yeah,
how to give positive
feedback.
Yeah. Apparently, some people's feedback was less than positive, so they took they took that seriously.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's really a lot like any national panels that I've been on for NSF or USDA or other programs. The review process is going through there, and how it's just feedback is really great and now and very professional. The biggest problem is, right, there's no more no new money and more people applying, right? So we've got, say the sort of a number of awards is flat because the dollar amount between them is flat, and it can be divided up more maybe to make smaller awards, but that's, it'd be great to see some, to find a good way to grow that. I think it's something I would like to see, so, but in a really good case, I think, we're trying. And then the Research Policy Committee, which I'm also the chair of that committee, we've moved now the annual research lecture and the community engaged research lectures are now at different times of year, so they're not both crammed in the fall semester. We've got community engaged research lectures in the fall and then the annual research lectures in the spring. So we can have a big research event in both semesters. We just had our fourth community engaged research lecture awardee. What I find really exciting now is we've had two from Health Campus, and I actually forget which parts of the different parts I think of Health Campus, but one from the School of Architecture and Planning, and one from Arts and Sciences over or the Planetary Sciences there, in an area that a lot of people were surprised to see community research coming out of, and really having a lot of discussions about both what communities are at different levels, from local to larger, what engagement is, and active discussion, and we're continuing to. Now we've had four of these awards, and the committee, sort of start to change, and people are sort of revisiting again, looking at that award carefully to make sure we're supporting it well, the call for the annual research lecture award is out right now for the spring. We encourage still people to put in time. It's still going to be due in January. There's not a lot of time to get those out, but we can use more. We have a lot of, I can also say about the community engaged research lecture award, it's not like a tiny pool. Like we've got a good number, a really significant number of really good folks. It's really nice to see that the pools are keeping coming. And then as we try to expand this, one of the issues we have with both the annual research lecture and the community engaged research lecture award, which we talked about a little bit last year when I came here, is trying to pin all of our hopes and desires for awards on two awards. Right? Everyone wants them both to be everything. And so they had submitted up to the you.
to the president.
Yeah, through to the president and the provost. Some recommendations for more awards to be created and potentially awards the way that they're even administered somewhat for whether support that might come out of the president's office or the provost's office.
And to give more recognition to faculty,
right? To increase the stature, to think about the awards, to think about titles, but also to think about some of the recommendations where, say, highlight our, some of our top new full professors and our top new associate professors that have tenure, right? It's a way to have broad sweeping awards across campus and they can be highlighted for different reasons. Another recommendation was to create actually a Creative Works Award that's still on paper and the president has, I've talked to the president a little bit about this recently, still on the top of her, or it's near desk of things she's trying to look at some more, but we also met with the provost, and she's very encouraged. She wants to do stuff with this. Right now, she's with, as the grand challenges sort of launch, she can start to do more about this. And the provost is also wants to move some of these things forward. I think it's very positive. I really think maybe even before this end of the term, we might hear some new things coming.
And they've worked hard on that. It sounds so simple when you just say it, but it took a lot of work. Yes.
Sorry, just a quick follow-up or a quick clarification. You said there's a Creative Works Award still in the works?
That we proposed. So we had a list of things that these are things we would recommend. One of these was a Creative Works Award that would be equal in stature to the Community Engaged Research and and an Annual Research Lecture Award.
I mean, years ago, we changed the nomenclature from research to research and creative works. And that's because many of us are in a field where our works are creative works and not, I mean, everyone's creative and everyone does research, but research is often defined as I did my physics paper and here are my results from it. So that's, that. I think that's homage to that a little bit.
Yeah.
For those of us who are abnormal.
Would that be open to faculty and staff or just faculty?
So far, they're all faculty awards.
Yeah, we're working on it. That's our job. Sorry.
So far, they're actually also tenure track faculty right now.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
There are issues to bring it to the award.
Research.
Yeah. And it's informative when you think about, they're still in the Faculty Senate, in the handbook.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitions for what research are and other works that are.
Do we need to check that out a little?
You might want to. It's not too bad, actually. It's interesting.
We need to check out the definitions of research in the handbook and make sure it reflects research creative works. There are people whose job it is to comb the handbook for problems.
Policy.
So we will send it to policy committee, right? So we can send that to them, yeah.
That's
okay. And
I had a question. Thank you for all your work on the Community Engagement Award. I wonder if it's possible to require that departments share how they're peer-reviewing community-engaged work because there's unevenness. And I know that there's an effort underway in the provost office, but some colleges are not sending out this work for peer review, and that is important. And also, is there a mechanism for people to self-nominate? And I wonder if we could just increase the possibilities that it's not just a departmental process, but you can self-nominate as well.
You can self-nominate. It would be good to find someone who would also write, you know, a letter for you. But you don't, you couldn't. You can self-nominate, and that's been brought up. Other people have asked that. Just the first time you've heard it. Because I understand it gets away from the politics.
Is there another question over here? Yeah.
Would this be new campus stuff too?
Well, branches can contribute, can't they?
We have not considered branches necessarily one way or the other. I guess I haven't thought about it. I mean, it's HSC and campus.
Can you apply for RAC?
I think we can.
Yes.
I don't know if they couldn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't imagine why not. Rick?
Green campus and branch.
And branch.
And branch, yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, the answer is yes. You probably just haven't done it much, right? You know, but you can.
Right.
There have been RAC awards.
That doesn't mean be suggesting to have them treated all sort of the same.
I just didn't know what it
means.
I think tenured faculty is tenured faculty. I know we don't see a distinction in the Senate, so I can't imagine that the handbook sees voting faculty, tenure is tenure. So, yeah, I imagine. What else you got? Anything?
No.
Any other question? I will say David's group has David's group has really made strides with Gabriel Lopez's shop with the Office of Sponsored Research and really helped people feel better about getting their grants through and deadlines and things like that. So he's done a lot personally for that in that group.
Do you vary then in terms of the candidates that are selected based on, I like what Nancy said very much in terms of the variation forms of community engagement, that when I think of community engagement, it comes with a very finite definition of engagement with communities. And then, or if you are also going with engagement in terms of just publications,
So is there two variant forms that you are selecting for in terms of the lecture or this award?
There aren't separate kinds of criteria that we do. I mean, there is engagement means they do have to interact with their communities, right, in a two-way street.
But your definition of community, is it all-encompassing? Is it just, can it vary in terms of just your university community or your overall community?
It can't be just university community. It must be beyond the university to get one definition.
So it could be anything, right? It could be, could it be only to scientists in the Albuquerque area? Is that a community, or does it have to be the population of Albuquerque, a neighborhood,
I think everything so far would be, we would argue about and discuss, but the general feeling would be outside of UNM, mm-hmm. and probably outside of academia, right? Community members, that at least some component of that has to be a significant aspect.
And Magdalena, that might be a good discussion. It sounds like a proposal conversation. Like, what is our definition of community engagement?
Yes.
And then everyone should have the same definition, but we may get at it differently. You know, but if it's only scientists for me, but people for you, that's not the same definition, right? So, that may be a larger issue
to discuss. The biggest issue right now is probably that there's the word research. That award is a subset of what we talk about, say research and learning and service parts of a triangle that make up kind of a community engaged scholarship.
And it also makes up P&T, which is why it's a great opportunity. Yeah, everyone's nodding because especially the women we know. Yeah, Lee.
I'm a little confused about the discussion on tenure track and tenure. I was thinking deep thoughts at the time and I missed it, but I don't use that as an excuse. Are clinician educators and lecturers excluded from this award? These awards?
The language is tenure track.
That I don't know. I thought it was just mean campus.
No, HSC. Applies.
Oh, we know it's not because it's branches too.
You keep saying HSC.
HSC members only count for both of
them.
Clinician educators are considered voting faculty.
You're voting faculty, but that's not tenure track all the same. No. It's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're asking it. Maybe look that up. Let's find
job.
Out.
Yeah,
I know. That's who you are.
Yeah.
Because I would take great offense if those two classes were excluded.
Yeah, I agree.
Lecturers also, I know some extraordinary lecturers.
Right.
Well, you guys can apply
right there.
We had this discussion last year at some point.
Just don't remember. Are you able to apply
for
that?
I'm sure.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the long thing is clear to me is that books are just research faculty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all
of them.
That's a whole other.
I know. That is long. Yeah. Okay, but go ahead. Last one, and then we're wrapping up.
Just
real
quick, college nursing, the vast majority is.
Lee has had this fight for a long time because there's some people that really see clinician educators as not the same as tenure track. I'm not one of them. But we've had a fight over this for a long time. And it's a valid fight. I mean, some people choose a path, but they're as valid as the rest.
Say one thing very quickly. In case anyone hasn't caught it yet, also the Office of Sponsored Projects has a different process for submitting grants now that people have only been hearing good things about so far, where instead of the sort of five-day rule, you have to get stuff in, 5 days and then 2 days or another part. Whenever you have a Cayuse record that you create, you create one anytime, then you say, you request an appointment, whatever number of days you want before your submission deadline, and if they have the time that they book you an appointment, during that time you go over everything, and at the end of that appointment it gets submitted. Unless they find some problem, they ask you to correct and they do that. And so far that on both sides, their office and the other people that we've been hearing from have been very happy. It's made a huge sort of turnover.
Thank you, Davey. Thanks for the report. I'm sorry, giving you the bump.
That's right.
Thank you for coming. We have one more item. Please don't leave. Christopher Lyons is here to talk about the unwieldy name of his task force, Protecting the Classroom Learning Environment Task Force. Well, we haven't thought of a more creative one. Yeah. So thank you, Christopher, for coming and waiting.
So if you remember the task of that force, or the mission of the task force was to think about ways to support faculty and think about the rights and responsibility of faculty in supporting and protecting the learning environment And you can, that's sort of in the context of what we might think of tumult and divisions in our particular culture and some of the concerns that faculty have, particularly in dealing with what we might call quote-unquote disruptive students. That's the Dean of Students term there. Thank you to Robin Minthorn for joining the task force as well. We've had a lot of meetings. We're going on our fifth meeting. We'll have our fifth meeting in December to wrap things up with the provost, and with Pamela will be joining us as well, so we're having a debriefing there. Hopefully try to distill some suggestions, some recommendations there, so I can't really speak of what those suggestions are going to be because we're going to decide them in our last meeting. But we've had four concrete meetings there. We focused particularly on gathering information from various stakeholders on campus, particularly the Dean of Students, on the University Council as well. We've also had some informal conversation with some policy people on campus as well. We've kind of focused on two main issues. One, what are the rights and responsibilities of faculty in dealing with the learning environment? What can we do to protect the learning environment? What can't we do? There we had to have a lot of information about educational law. I'm not a lawyer, but I feel like I've got taken a class in it recently. So we've heard a lot from University Council on that, from the Dean of Students. Interestingly, who's also a lawyer, interesting, they're not always seeing eye to eye on some of these issues. That's been very interesting to us. I think one good thing is that they are seeing more eye to eye now. We've also talked about how can we support faculty in dealing with disruptive students, particularly faculty who may feel threatened by students on varying levels. We talk a lot about that. We've come up with a lot of potential things that we might be able to recommend. A lot of it has to do with institutionalizing support, perhaps with positions. I'm not sure we're going to get money to do this, but asking for maybe even a faculty representative or a faculty liaison in the Dean of Students office, for example, who would help guide faculties or be somebody who faculty can turn to in getting feedback on students who may be considered disruptive, because it's very clear that even the student's office does not have the resources to do all of this. They're completely understaffed right now anyway. And we've also focused, I don't think anybody will be surprised that we haven't solved these issues in two and a half, three months. But we have, I think, the thing that we have done is actually the least tangential, tangible, I should say, is that we've gotten groups together who have not talked a lot around these issues. I think now the Dean of Students, the University Council, and some other people on campus, including the Provost's Office, have a better understanding of some faculty concerns on this. So at least a better understanding of faculty point of view. I think a lot of people, there's many times when we have this conversation, everybody's scratching their head and like, we realize the problem is there, but we don't really know what to do about it. So I think we're going to have to continue this conversation, but I do think it's really good to get deep people in the room and talk. So I think there is some optimism here.
And this will go on next semester?
I think probably there is some interest. Who's going to be on the committee? I don't know.
Right, he's on sabbatical, so.
But we should. I think there's enough interest to keep these conversations going. I know it seems like the provost office wants also keep the conversation going. Be great to have continue to have faculty senate representation there.
Mm-hmm. Good. Any questions or thoughts? I mean, it's a great example of a senate committee that actually took a charge and brought people together to talk. I'm really happy about that. Stefan.
We don't have anybody on the committee that represents students here, but clearly the Dean of Students bring that perspective, and I think that's been something that has been, I think there's clear representation in terms of their interests in terms of student rights and so forth.
I think this committee came about because there's so much student input on this issue, and there hasn't been faculty in. So the students' rights are protected all the way up and down the line, but faculty were feeling disempowered and threatened in their own classroom. So that's why I don't think they branched out. I think eventually I could see you discussing it with students, right, this group. I could see that. Other thoughts? Yeah. Sorry.
Does the committee include representation from North Campus?
Yes, right?
Former North Campus faculty.
Former North Campus. Somebody who just now moved now to. You know, we have school we have Anderson School of Management, so which is not really on North Campus, but we've also somebody who's come from North Campus.
Everyone, sorry. We changed sides.
So no, but a lot of the concerns
we brought him over
to the dark side.
But it's been very clear that different schools have very differing problems, concerns.
Right.
So that's at least been communicated by the types of more online classes over. Or the fact that they're right by a busy road and there's more,
fine arts, we've got that,
there's a lot of differences even within our large community.
In this semester, how exercises works, like, we had a situation where one of our program's part-time instructors had a student take the course, complained of major clinical sensitivities, and then all these demands of the instructor, she was a nervous wreck. I went and met with legal regarding our rights as faculty. There was hardly any room for anything. The student did hold cards, per se, because we had an online option. We told her about that. You don't have to worry about anything online. You take the course. She refused. She totally, completely refused. When we spoke to legal, this student had a case of about five other professors who had complained. And she personally uses that power of her chemical sensitivities to just disrupt the class throughout the semester. Wow. This part-time instructor has been miserable. And we didn't have a case. People said we didn't. They were too concerned about the students' rights. And so, yes, it does put it out there where we as faculty have a right, because it's also our mental health and the mental health of our students.
And the environment.
And I'm totally recognized disabilities completely, and I'm an advocate. But when you have a choice, if you take something online and you choose to still come in and just take the class and require everyone to stop wearing everything, I mean, it's been crazy. It's been an awful semester.
Wow. There's another case for you.
So she was relying on the ADA for backup.
Yeah.
But then it says you must make reasonable accommodation.
Mm-hmm. They came in and they spoke, and I think legal offices spoke to them.
You know, with technology these days, Skype, and all the ways of participating.
Yeah, she's saying she refused
there.
That. Right. Yeah.
Well,
she's not,
reverse,
kind
she
of
doesn't
bullying.
Have the right to
refuse.
Right.
She's not being reasonable.
She's not at all.
Right. So, but you're saying there was no one to offer that argument.
Right.
The fact that we had 6-7 faculty sitting with counsel and sitting with the dean of students, they clearly got the message that something is missing here. There's issues with communication, with institutional communication. There's issues with, faculty feeling like they're not being listened to on these issues. Students have the level of respect office. Faculty don't really have anything comparable to that. Maybe that's something we have to think about. All of these have been discussed. All I can say toward that issue is that I do think the University Council is now taking these concerns a little bit more heart. I don't know what exactly is going to lead to this, the outcome is going to be, but I do think the communication hopefully will lead to some better institutionalized practice.
Does the AFNT have any role in this jurisdiction?
It's hard because it's not really infringing on the academic freedom.
Does it? If a teacher can't teach?
Well, it's not telling them what to teach. It's how it's
delivered. How they teach
it's affecting how they teach.
Yeah.
It could be.
That's an interesting
but
idea.
Not
maybe
a proper
we should
consideration
speak with
the
teacher.
Yeah,
one.
I think
that's a good idea.
Educational law is pretty clear on educational rights. It's a property right, and you can't take away property rights. And so that's a big. This is where the difficulty lies. So if it's framed as a academic freedom issue, that would be very interesting. Yeah.
So she was not relying on ADA. She was relying on.
I don't know the particular case.
Yeah, we don't have ADA. Right.
Okay.
ADA background.
Well, they always there on that side, right? You do? Okay. Great. Other quick comments before we ask for new business? Thank you, Christopher. Thanks for the work, and I'll see you soon. Any new business? I know it's the last 2 minutes who wants to start something, but if you've got something, let me know. Okay. So I'd like a motion to adjourn. And a second. Well, you're not on our team, so you can't give me a motion.
But
thank you.
President, I only called for the attention. That public comment section.
Oh!
Please, go ahead, public comment. Sorry.
Public comment, please.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Hi, my name is Cameron Goble. I won't be keeping you, and I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Thorne as a Florida student. Thank you for being instrumental in my success and education. I'm here to speak to you as the assistant director of the STEM Collaborative Center. We are a freshman and sophomore supporting student affairs department, grant funded. What we do is we put on events for students outside of the classroom to keep them sort of on track and motivated to achieve any STEM degrees that they might need after. And simply putting out a call for the next semester, we are putting together a program that's going to go into the residence life commons room with sort of pop-up science, pop-up STEM displays and interactions. So to give you an idea, if any of you are aware of the civic engineering department has a portable landscape sandbox, which is really cool. It can simulate water flows using 3D imaging technology. We're just going to put that in the, we're going to put displays like that into the common room so the students who happen to be walking back and forth in the common room and live on campus can get interactions with science, technology, and topics that they might need. The reason why I'm asking for a call is that I don't know where all such pop-up interactive displays might be. I know of a few of them. If you happen to know of any, or if any of your colleagues are doing outreach work with portable displays that are interactive in nature, please contact me. Again, my name is Cameron Goble. My email is Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N-G, at unm.edu, or you can look me up through the STEM Collaborative website at stem.unm.edu. Also, Madam President, since you were talking about academics within borders at the San Juan College, I would simply like to put a name in front of you. It's Dr. Tim Schroeder. He happens to be my director, but he recently concluded his doctorate in educational leadership, and he worked directly in San Juan for a number of years.
Great.
So he might
good. Yeah, no, thanks. I keep getting names. Thank you for that. Okay. Thank you very much. Now is my motion to adjourn. And a second. Sorry, we need to redo it. Second. Thank you, everyone. Hey, we won't meet until January. So, but seriously, if there are issues, use the email. Very handy.
I lost operations.
Hey, how are you?
They go unless they're called up.
Every time I sit, I can't get up.
So the question is,
I think this battery is running out.